Welcome to episode 33 of Published. Today I'll speak with author and speaker Tim Cagle about his experience self-publishing and distributing his book Into Airports.
Welcome to Published, a podcast by Greenleaf Book Group, where we'll discuss the ins and outs of the publishing industry, from writing a book and finding the right publisher, to gearing up for a book launch. And now, here's your host, Greenleaf Book Group CEO, Tanya Hall.
Welcome back to Published. In today's episode, we're talking about bookstore distribution for self-published authors with a focus on getting books into airports and specifically when it makes sense to partner with a distributor. When most people hear the word bookstore, they think of standalone stores first, like Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, or your local independent bookstore. The idea of getting a book into an airport bookstore may not occur to many first-time authors, but it's definitely a great way to reach a targeted audience who are likely to read the book very soon after its purchase. For business authors in particular, reaching that business travel demographic is highly desirable for many reasons. The process to get your book into an airport bookstore can be complex and often requires the help of a distributor like Greenleaf. We are a publisher and a distributor. And here to provide more insights from an author perspective is Tim Cagle, a longtime Greenleaf author and presentation coach with decades of experience working with individuals and organizations in the private sector and in government. He's the author of The Exceptional Presenter and The Exceptional Presenter Goes Virtual, the former of which was a New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestseller here at Greenleaf Book Group. Let's get into the interview. Okay, Tim, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tanya. Great to be here.
Of course. So why don't we start with a little bit of background, if you would, and tell us a bit about your book, since our listeners may not know, and the audience that you try to reach with it. And then tell us about your original publishing journey, because I'm, spoiler alert, I know you self-published first, but why you went that route to start.
Yes. Well, I went that way at the beginning because it was the easiest and the fastest. Mm-hmm. The story was, I had a lot of people who attended my workshops. They said, hey, do you have any type of book besides a handout to leave in these workshops? So I never had a book, and I had the idea of I should put this together, almost the workshop in book form. And there was a deadline. I had a business school I was speaking to, 500 students, and I hinted to the lady running the program that I had a book. And she said, well, will it be ready by the time we do the workshop? Because I'd like to get a copy for all the students. So right away, I'm thinking 500 books. Yeah. I will have a book by the time we do this in August.
Figure it out.
Yeah, and I started at the beginning of the year, worked any time I could. I had somebody, a friend of ours, who drew the sketches for the book. There were a lot of sketches, illustrations in there. And the interesting part of that first book is we had our second son, our second child, in March of the year the book came out. And the best time to write was right after the last feeding at midnight when he finally went to sleep until 3 in the morning when he woke up again.
Oh, my gosh.
And I found I could get 3 hours uninterrupted. I would feed him on the 3 a.m. feeding and then go back to bed. And the funny part, my wife didn't even know I was doing this. I would fall asleep a little bit when we'd go to bed, wake up, feed him, do 3 hours of work. But that was the best time to work. No phones, no interruptions.
Yeah.
And I got a lot of work done. Finished it on time and had a sale of 500 books right off the bat.
Nice, right out of the gate. And why don't we tell folks, they'll hear it in the intro, of course, but why don't we tell folks a little bit about the name of the book and what you do as a trainer?
Yeah, the book's called The Exceptional Presenter, and I work with people to improve what they're saying, the message, how to organize it, and then how to deliver that message. So the target audience, really at the time, were my clients, but it applies to anybody who has to communicate in a business setting, parents who have to communicate with their kids, anybody who has to organize a message and be more effective in the way they deliver that message.
Mm-hmm. So perfect type of content to have a book to support your speaking and consulting work, for sure.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah. So talk to us a bit more about your self-publishing journey, because you obviously, you went out and did that on your own and you made some great headway just by yourself.
In terms of
distribution.
Yeah, I was excited about it to have the book because I had been doing the training for a long time, finally had a book, and I was determined to get the book wherever I could. They would ship to my house. We'd bring them in the basement one box at a time. I was handling the mailings, the billing, from all these different organizations. It was very difficult. My enthusiasm was the only thing that took me through that. But it got to the point where I'm thinking, I can't do this anymore. I don't have the time to do it anymore. And I wasn't getting paid on half of the invoices that I was sending out. I couldn't even track everything. Because right. Hundreds and hundreds of invoices I'm sending out. And I thought, I need help. So I talked to a client of mine, John Kilcullen, who was the CEO of IDG Books. He was the one that came up with the Dummies books, all the mm-hmm. DOS for Dummies, Wine for Dummies. And John, IDG Books already had a presentation skills book. And he said, well, I wouldn't go through somebody like us anyway. I would not go through one of the big New York houses because they'll give you 30 days, 45 days max, and then they're on to their 200 other assignments. And it wasn't too long after that, he contacted me with Greenleaf. He said, I saw an article. Why don't you contact this organization? And that's where the relationship with Greenleaf began.
Yeah, well, I'm so glad that he did that.
I am as well.
Nice long relationship for us. So let's go back to, you were in airport bookstores. You got your book into Hudson's on your own, which is, we were just talking earlier before we started the podcast, would be pretty hard to do today. But how did you do that? And why are airports important for you?
Well, because it's business travelers mm-hmm. and it's a business book, how to do presentations better. Obviously, everybody in business can't, if they can improve, they can do their job better. And I would take the books, I'd take stacks of them with me on every trip, every client trip that I go on, and stop in those stores and just give them 5 books and say, can you see how fast these sell? Or if they sell, and just keep the money if they sell, do whatever you want. Again, I don't know accounting-wise how that worked out, but I started getting really good feedback. And in Cincinnati, the Terminal C with Delta, they were moving a lot of the books. And then I approached Hudson. They did a trial. I think it was 15 of their stores. And the books sold well. So they said, all right, we'll roll it out.
Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations. That's amazing early success for sure. And I'm not so sure it could happen today. There's, as you mentioned before we started recording, there's a lot more organization and systems to go through. So assuming our typical listener doesn't know how airport placements work today, would you kindly help them understand the economics that go into this type of placement?
Sure. You have your option. They give you different options on where you want the book. Mine, I always had a face out. So it would be the face of the book directly out. And every now and then they do what they call, I think it was a super face out, where they'd have it face out and they'd have spine out next to it, maybe 3 books on either side. So it was a bigger area that it would cover. But there's a range of prices. You pay for the face out, you pay more if it's on a table, you pay more if it's up by the cash register. And it just depends if you're getting enough clients from mm-hmm. who are purchasing the book. That's a little bit hard to track. But I always ask people, where did you get in touch with us? And somebody said, well, somebody gave my boss this book. He found it in a Hudson store. So you'd be able to track that relationship. Mm-hmm. I found that over time, it just became too expensive for mm-hmm. me. You get to the point where you're thinking, there's no way I'm selling anywhere close to the number of books to justify it. Am I getting the business to justify it? I'm not sure. Because there's so many different ways to market it nowadays. I mean, with the internet and all the access you have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And that's something that we always talk our authors through when it comes to the airport placements, because as you mentioned, they're not inexpensive. And so you can't look at it and say, how many books do I have to sell to make a return? It's not going to happen that way. It's a $20 product.
Right, you know? Right. And I was happy with it for probably, I bet I did it for 10 years mm-hmm. through Hudson. And before Borders, I did a few with Borders. And I think occasionally Barnes & Noble, not as many with those. But for 10 years, I felt it was 8 to 10 years. I felt it was a good return. It just got to the point where every year it was more. Mm-hmm. I mean, even in 2007, 2008, the economy's absolutely getting crushed, and they were popping those. You're going to pay more the next year if you want to face out.
Yeah, I always say one of these days I'm going to buy myself an airport bookstore.
Well, you know the dynamics of this more than I do. They probably make a lot more on placement than they do on book sales themselves.
Oh, I imagine,
right?
So, yeah.
No, I don't think there's any comparison.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that, yeah. So you have an interesting journey in terms of starting out as a self-published author, coming to work with Greenleaf in a distribution and publishing capacity at some point. So for somebody who might be listening and is in that critical decision mode, I suppose, maybe they're already self-published and they think, oh, I wish I could access a wider market. I'm hitting some distribution roadblocks. What advice would you give that person in terms of making the decision to partner with a distributor? Like what should they be evaluating?
Speaking from my experience, the big key for me was I was presenting in front of large audiences. So I had a natural built-in, like I was saying, the first one, 500 students at a mm-hmm. business school. So I'm speaking to 150, 300, 400 people when I'm going out. I could self-publish and sell them that way, but it was just too much. I didn't want to handle all the details. The transition to Greenleaf was such an incredible experience. It still is, because everybody at Greenleaf takes pride in their work, really enjoys working with you as an author and your book. And I just felt like it was almost an extension of my staff. It was almost like I had hired this whole division to help me with my book.
It kind of is.
It is, yeah, absolutely. And I still feel that way. It just takes so many of the hassles and headaches. But it was attractive to me because I could still provide these larger groups with volumes of books, but not get crushed by a publisher where I'm getting, whatever, 20 cents, 25 cents a book. I can make a lot more per book instead of working with a bigger firm that's really not interested in my book anymore anyway. Mm-hmm. I just felt it was a better way. I could make more money with the model at Greenleaf than I could through any of the large publishers.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Glad that worked out. Mm-hmm. And as you're thinking about authors who may be listening and in the same shoes as you, perhaps they're thought leaders or consultants, experts in some area, are there any other bits of advice you would give them on how to leverage the book or their content to support the work that they do?
The book gives you credibility, and I don't know how much that has to do with the actual content in the book or the fact that you have a book.
A little bit of A, a little bit of B.
Right. But do it. If there's any question, do it. Because how many times do you have an opportunity to capture something, to put it down in print, and to be able to share that with and get the range, be able to share it with that many people? It just doesn't happen. I mean, even with my workshops, I could do workshops every day until I drop, but the reach that the book gives you is significantly further mm-hmm. than you can have yourself.
Let's see, anything else that you would say to our authors in terms of advice for anyone who's self-publishing or is maybe just thinking about starting down this journey?
Yeah, I think if they're thinking of starting down the journey, at least look at the option of doing it all yourself or getting a company like Greenleaf involved, and even talk to the big houses to see what they have to say. They might be interested. You might find that avenue quicker, easier, you know, because there are more expenses as it relates to the hybrid as an author. Mm-hmm. And you really have to look at from a business perspective, how do each of those things play out? We were just talking about the bookstores. I mean, it's a big number, but if you're overcoming that with business that's coming out of it and book sales, then it's a great number to do. Mm-hmm. So I would say look at all three versions of the way to go. I think the hybrid is you get the most help. I think it would have been a little bit faster for me to do it. Although I have to say it's hard to publish a book in. I had 8 months, so I was able to do it in 8 months on the self-publishing. But when I look at that book, I almost
do you cringe a little?
Yeah, I do cringe. I cringe more than a little. I mean, at the time, I thought it was spectacular. It's funny, nobody ever complained about it. But when I look at it compared to my book since working with Greenleaf, it's night and day. There's no comparison.
Yeah, no, I remember.
The level of professionalism has definitely been bumped up 50 notches.
Oh, good. Thank you. And that's an important note to make because I think sometimes people, we always call it shotgun publishing. They're so eager, especially if you've been working on the book for a long time, they're so eager to get it out into the world. And sometimes for no real reason other than I just want to birth it, you know? So that can be dangerous because your brand is connected to that book and it's surprisingly hard to get rid of online, especially, you know, once Amazon, for instance, they'll keep that first edition up and it'll just say unavailable. Good luck getting them to take it down. They want to be able to show their customer that, yeah, you're looking for this book. We know it exists. We just don't have it, but we know it exists.
Yes.
As we deal with that all the time, authors trying to get us to take their old editions of something down and it's next to impossible. So that brand sticks.
Well, I think it relates, Tanya, to almost every part of the book process. I thought that cover looked good when I published it, but I have no eye for that.
Right.
And I thought the text that we used inside, the font we used, everything looked good. It didn't. Looking back, it didn't. And you get professionals looking at it people here at Greenleaf, it's amazing when somebody knows what they're doing, how much better they can make every part of the book look.
Yeah, definitely. And that matters so much when we're trying to chase this big distribution. The buyers that we pitch have a certain expectation for how things look and even fonts, and they have, some of them just have personal preferences for colors on the cover, things like that. But yeah, a professional team watches those trends and can be your partner if you let them do their job.
And to go back to your question about people thinking about this process, I'd also think about international. Do you want to, you want this book to be printed in multiple languages? That would have been, maybe I could have found somebody to translate it, but there's no way I could have gotten it published in different languages. I think mine's in eight or nine languages.
Yeah, I did a lot of your foreign rights deals
did
myself.
You?
I got you, you're big in Latvia.
Latvia, yes. The Latvia, the cover, because it's the publishing company over there decides what the look should be.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked like, I don't know what it looked like. Everybody
looked like,
had veils on.
It
the
looked
women.
Like an audience in a horror film. It's green.
Right. That was bad. But two versions of Chinese, Japanese, Korean, French, Latvian, multiple, but that won't happen. If you self-publish and try to do that yourself, there's no way that'll happen.
Yeah. Cool. Well, Tim, it's been so fun to have you. Thank you so much for joining us on Published, and really appreciate your time.
Tanya, it's great to be back. Thank you.
Sure. Well, that's it for our episode today. We hope you learned something new about airport bookstore distribution and feel equipped to seek placement for your own book. For notes and resources from today's show, go to greenleafbookgroup.com/episode33. You can also find advice for writing, publishing, and promoting your work in my book, Ideas, Influence, and Income, which you can learn more about at ideasinfluenceandincome.com. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate and review us on iTunes. It means a lot to have your feedback and helps us make sure we're answering your publishing questions. A big thank you to Claire Yench, who produces the Published podcast, and we'll be back next month with another new episode.
Thanks for listening to Published. To learn more, please visit greenleafbookgroup.com. And remember to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes.